Support for Class Dismissed comes from School Status. School Status is the only K-12 data analytics platform designed to turn analysis into engagement. To learn more about how School Status can change your school district, head over to schoolstatus.com. You are listening to Class Dismissed, episode 26, and I'm your host, Nick Ortego. A fifth grade class in Philadelphia created a working prosthetic hand for a young girl in need by using their classroom 3D printer. And a superintendent in Idaho pushes the envelope with personalized learning. Stay with us. Class Dismissed is the podcast that inspires educators through story. Each week we cover some of the hottest topics in news in the world of education. Plus we speak with a guest with a bright idea for education that you can apply in your community. This week is Thanksgiving week, so we're taking a short break to spend some time with our families. However, we didn't want to go a week without giving you something to listen to, so we've woven together a couple of our favorite interviews. First up, Jada Puglisi. She wanted a 3D printer for her classroom, and what she did with it once she got it is simply amazing. Our guest in today's Bright Idea segment is one of the pioneers of 3D printing in the K-12 classroom. Jada Puglisi is a fifth grade teacher at Andrew Jackson School in Philadelphia, and she's a Milken Educator Award recipient, one of just 35 nationwide this year. Jada, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me today.
Absolutely. And you know, I got to say, being a Milken Award recipient, that's a really big deal. Tell me about that real quick.
It has been an extremely big deal. You know, the Milken Award is a very prestigious award. It's comparable to winning an Oscar as an educator. And all Milken educators are completely blindsided. We don't know that we're winning the award. We're not made aware of the nomination process and actually how we're selected. They just have a surprise assembly in which they award you with this, you know, with the title of being a Milken educator as well as a $25,000 check. And it has been life-changing.
I didn't realize that was a surprise.
It gives me great pleasure to present the Milken Educator Award.
Because I actually watched the video of you getting the award. It's available on YouTube if anyone wants to go see it.
Jada Puglisi!
But it looks like the state superintendent for all of Pennsylvania came to, I guess, your auditorium and just kind of announced it. And you really genuinely look surprised. In fact, you kind of go into tears in the video, correct?
Yeah. You know, it's so funny, the story behind that, because I was accidentally, quote unquote, marked absent as a teacher for that day. And I went to the main office during, you know, at the beginning of the school day and was telling the office, look, I'm present. I'm here. I don't understand why I was marked absent. And I was like really upset. And so I go up to my classroom and I'm teaching, and then they call us down for this random assembly. And
right,
we're going down to the assembly and, you know, I'm just making sure my kids are sitting well behaved, and they're talking about, you know, celebrating teachers. And I'm like, oh, this is a really nice assembly. And then when they started talking about the milk, that Lowell Milken was there, I knew about the Milken Educator Award because it's something that I learned about in the doctorate program that I'm in. And I'm like, oh, somebody's going to win the Milken Award.
Yeah, I want you to come in here and take the picture with us.
I just didn't ever dawn that I would be the person to win the award. I think that's why I was so shocked. It was just like, and it made sense on why I was marked absent, because then I had to deal with news press all day.
I just want you to know, if you're sitting out there, I was just like you. I grew up in South Philly, not too far from here. Both of my parents did not graduate from high school. I was actually the first in my family to graduate from high school, and I was the first in my family to graduate from college. So you can change your life and you can change everything. Take your education seriously. When you get older, things like this can happen to you.
Well, you know, and I wanted to bring you on the show because I was reading more press about you and just the success you've been having with 3D printing. And, you know, I've kind of been, I consider myself technically savvy, but for
yes,
years I have just kind of sat as a spectator as 3D printing has progressed. And I've never even used a 3D printer, mainly because I just don't have access to one. how are you using a 3D printer in the classroom? Because I think it's intimidating for a lot of folks.
It is intimidating. And I will tell you this, that unless I would have raised money for a 3D printer, I myself would have never used one. I never used a 3D printer before until I raised the money for one in my classroom. And a lot of what I learned was from YouTube. I looked up videos, you know, while I was trying to raise money and just understand, you know, how the technology works. And then finally, I was able to raise enough money for the 3D printer and I ordered one. And then I was like terrified because it was like, okay, I have a 3D printer now. I need to make sure that I can integrate this into my instruction. I went into it, you know, honest with my students. And I said, okay, listen, guys. I have no idea how to use a 3D printer. I have a good idea on how to do it because I'm a tech savvy person, but I've never used one. I don't know what to do. You're going to be learning with me. And they actually embraced my honesty and they, you know, we all learned together. We would watch the YouTube videos after school. They would stay, you know, 30 minutes extra after school, everyone, wow, and just sit and watch YouTube videos with me, you know, about how to change the filament, about how to calibrate the build plate, about, you know, simple things that you don't think about, but, you know, the maintenance of the 3D printer. We were just absorbing everything. And we actually did a really big project in which my students actually built businesses around, you know, their own creation off of the 3D printer. And, you know, they marketed their product, you know, built a brand.
What type of products did you see them come up with?
So the goal for that specific project, each of them had to create a collectible. And collectibles are so popular now, you know, there's a collectible for everything. You could go to Five Below and find, you know, superhero collectibles, you know, little dirt bike people. There's so many different things. So each of them, their goal was to create what they would consider to be a popular collectible that someone their age would want and, you know, purchase. And they would have to actually create a sales pitch. And at the end of the school year, they came in dressed up in business suits and, you know, dresses and did a sales pitch to their class with their little printed out item, you know, trying to convince us to buy the item and why to try to convince us in investing in their company, trying to convince us, you know, purchase their item to, you know, all of that into the scale of all that. I even had some students actually create a commercial.
Has there ever been anything that's kind of had like a real life implication?
Yeah. So my students and I were actually looking up videos about, you know, applications on what we could do for 3D printing. A lot of what was coming up was, you know, prosthetics. And this was last school year. And I was just like, I was still new with the 3D printing. I didn't want to dive into it.
No, that's aggressive.
Yeah. So I, in the 2016-17 school year, this past school year, I was like, okay, I'm going to try it. But I was a little hesitant because, you know, I have 2 5th grade classes. I wasn't sure how I was going to approach it with them. You know, we're doing something really real and I wasn't sure how they were going to react. But I actually ran into a parent and she had a daughter, a 4-year-old daughter that had her hand. She was born with without a hand. Mm-hmm. And I discussed with the parent that there could be a potential of me creating a prosthetic. I couldn't guarantee anything because I was still new at this, but I would try with my class to make one. And I told my students about it and they were like, absolutely, you know, we're going to try it. We're going to do it. And it took us a lot of tries. You know, there was a lot of a very big learning curve and, you know, actually building the hand took some time, but we were actually able to create a usable prosthetic and they did a lot of it themselves.
So it was actually usable, like this, yes, this child.
Yes, this child has a hand created from our 3D printer.
From fifth graders. That's amazing.
From fifth graders. So it actually led to us partnering up with a charity called Pawsthetics. Paul, PAW Aesthetics, mm-hmm. And we're actually going, the initiative that I have for this coming year is we're going to be paired up with animals that need prosthetics. So all my students are going to be being paired up with specific animals that are going to need, you know, given prosthetic parts, like for a turtle shell. We'll actually be creating a turtle shell for a turtle.
So what's your students' reaction to this? I mean, here they helped another child. get a prosthetic and in the future they're going to be helping animals. What are they saying?
They, you know, it's really interesting. When we actually talked about us helping a child that doesn't have a hand or us helping an animal, it became more real to them after they saw it printed out and they realized where it was going. I actually had like a few students start crying because they were just, I can't believe that we're doing this kind of realization, like kicked in for them that we were actually creating a hand that a little girl is going to use.
Who was actually there when you guys presented the prosthetic to the little girl?
I printed my final print I have an after school club called Steam Makers. My students had just finished up the measurements and they were testing out doing the final print. And it takes 24 hours for the hand to print, mm-hmm. like the final hand that we made.
Right.
It took about 24 and a half hours. And it just happened to finish during the middle of my club. And we were taking it apart and putting it together. And we were like, this is going to fit. This is going to work. And after that, we just built it, you know, strung it together, put the screws in. And, you know, all the stuff, like the string and the screws, only cost about $20.
Wow.
So pretty much you could build a prosthetic hand as long as you know the measurements and everything for about $25, if that. And that saved that family thousands of dollars and having to, you know.
Because the child's still growing, I imagine.
Yeah, and that's why a lot of, you know, insurance companies don't want to cover prosthetics because the child's still growing. It's not that they, you know, don't want to. It's that eventually, you know, that child is not going to fit that hand anymore. And my hope is that when she doesn't fit that hand anymore, we can build another one.
A 3D printer, if somebody's listening and they're like, I've always wanted to do this. I mean, what's your recommendation? Is it right for everybody? Is it not right for everybody?
You know, it's right for the person that wants to incorporate something really different in their classroom. You know, if you're really tired of, you know, doing something traditional, you're a tech person, you like incorporating technology in different ways, but you want to try something next level, I would definitely recommend getting a 3D printer. It is really next level.
Well, if somebody wants to follow along just kind of with what you're doing in the future and what you've done in the past, do you have a blog or anything that you kind of maintain?
Yeah, you know, I'm actually going to be creating a blog, but I do have a website, which is just jadapuglisi.com. Mm. And I will actually be placing a blog up on my website pretty soon because I actually have been getting a lot of requests to talk about 3D printing. So you just keep an eye out there and it'll be coming out pretty soon.
Excellent. Well, again, we appreciate you coming on the show to talk about the 3D printer. Are you ready for our pop quiz?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Awesome. I love the excitement. First question. If students could only go to school for one subject, which subject would it be?
That's so hard. Science.
Science. All right.
Science.
Fair enough. What are we not teaching in school that we should be teaching?
Oh, there's so many. Basic skills for life. So I know that's a really broad answer, but how to balance a checkbook, how to nail something, how to sew a button on a shirt,
mm-hmm.
basic skills of life. So there should just be a life skills class that's taught, you know, maybe every few years where you teach these kids instead of, you know, having them take phys ed every single year in elementary school. Why don't we, you know, incorporate half a year of phys ed and half a year of basic life skills where they're actually doing physical things. It's just, you know, it could be like a shop class or it could be, I really think that they need to be exposed to more things because we're putting students on the pathway to go to college and that's not the choice for all of the students. They should also have technical options, and a lot of our students don't know that. So let's go with basic life skills.
What does every child deserve?
Every child deserves, that's a great question. Every child deserves everything. They deserve to be in a classroom environment, not only where they feel welcomed, but where they get, you know, a well-rounded education. They deserve everything. Children deserve the world and more. And I just hope that, you know, we as teachers are able to give that to them.
What's the biggest challenge for today's educators?
The biggest challenge, I don't like to use the word nonsense, but it's the best word that I can think of. All the nonsense that teachers have to deal with in order to make sure that our students get the best education. Teachers are very underpaid and districts are very underfunded and resources are not there. And if a teacher wants to put a 3D printer in their classroom, they should have the access to put a 3D printer in their classroom. They shouldn't have to raise money and ask for donations. It doesn't matter what school you're in. I'm pretty sure that your school is starting to cut corners in areas that have already been cut. So that is the biggest challenge right now.
What's the best gift to give an educator?
The best gift? An Amazon gift card.
You're not the first person that said that.
An Amazon gift card? The best gift you, honestly, the best gift to give an educator is just something for, you know, all I ask all the time is I want something new for my classroom. I want something, you know, something that I can use that's practical. You know, a lot of the stuff, again, it comes down to resources. We don't have it.
What career path would you take if you couldn't be in education?
I've always been stuck between an engineer. I probably would have gone into engineering or some type of techie job where I did something with computers.
What teacher changed your life?
The teacher that changed my life was my eighth grade teacher, Miss Crossan. She's the one that gave me confidence. I owe her a lot of what I have come out to be today. So
that's good. I'm finding that confidence is a general theme with the answer to that question as we ask people. It's really kind of inspiring, actually.
Yeah, it's very, you know, it's really interesting. I'm hearing impaired, so I found out that I was hearing impaired when I was in the fifth grade, and my hearing started getting worse throughout the years, and when I made it to the eighth grade, I got bullied all the time, and I said to my teacher, I'm like, I'm just gonna grow up and end up working at, like, a job, you know, that only people with disabilities have. And she's like, no, you can do whatever you want. Don't listen to anyone. And I was like, well, I don't understand, you know, how that could be possible because I have a disability. She's like, you show them that they're all wrong. And so I did.
Buy a school lunch or bring your own?
Bring my own. Because the school lunch program is, yeah.
Okay, fair enough. What do you do on your planning period?
Most times on my planning period, I don't have a very long amount of time. I only get 45 minutes a day. And that is if I don't have to cover another teacher for being absent. And sometimes teachers are absent and we have to cover each other. But if I'm available, most times I'm actually setting up my classroom for a science lab.
Last question, pen or pencil?
Definitely always a pencil.
All right, Jada Puglisi, again, we really appreciate you taking the time to join us and share with our listeners all about 3D printing. And again, congratulations on the Milken Award.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Such a great story from Jada, super bright teacher. We certainly wish her the best. Next up, we're headed to Idaho, where a superintendent named Jeff Dillon knew his district was in need of a big educational shakeup, so he aggressively flipped his district upside down with personalized learning. Here's Jeff's story. Our guest in today's Bright Idea segment is a school superintendent from Wilder, Idaho, who dove headfirst with his school in the world of personalized education. His students now learn at their own pace, often using iPads, in just about any space in the classroom that they're comfortable in. Superintendent Jeff Dillon, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Nick. Appreciate the opportunity.
All right. Now, first, if you can, for any of our listeners out there who aren't familiar with this world of personalized education, kind of draw a picture, bring everybody up to speed with what we mean when we say that.
It really is the idea of personalized learning. Every student that we have in our building, in our district, are just like the kids that, we raise in our homes. Every student is an individual student. They're all unique. They have different passions. They have different things that they like to gravitate toward, that they're excited about, that drives their interests and ideas and passions. And by personalizing it, allows the students to spend more time reading if that's something they choose to do. If a student is struggling with math, you get more time and support from the teacher than you would in a whole group instruction approach. It allows the student to be creative and innovative.
I have a picture in my head, and I want you to correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm envisioning, you know, a classroom full of students. How big are your classrooms? Like 20 students or so? Or?
You know, anywhere from 20 to 35.
Okay, so 20 to 35 students, and they all are kind of picking the subjects that they feel like studying at any given time during the day. So they may be sitting in the corner looking at their iPad and focused on math, while another student may be focused on reading. And I guess the teacher kind of bounces around. Is that it?
It's the strength of the teacher in that capacity there. Sometimes you walk into a classroom and students, even the elementary building, students have the ability to, throughout the day, they know the subjects that need to have covered that day, and they know where they need to talk with a teacher about that subject. The student, this is kind of unique. So a student could come in the classroom and really want to, desire to do math first in the morning, because that's the something that really gets them going in the morning. And so this teacher allows that student to start off with math. And you begin to build success from the very moment the student's in the building that day. And another student might walk in and something happened. They really want to write about it. And so they know they have to write today. So why not write at the beginning of the day for that student? And then the teacher begins to communicate and mentor students throughout the day. And the students go to the teacher when they need that little bit of help over the top of the next hurdle. And that's really the K-5 setting. In the middle school, high school, the students have full control of their day. We do not have school bells that drive kids from class to class. They have full control of their pace, and their plan. Mm-hmm. And they get that full-on support from the teachers when it's time.
You guys, I don't know if it was you or a principal or somebody, actually calculated the inefficiency of the school bell system, and that you guys believe you're actually getting more studying in by eliminating the school bells in the classroom switches. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. I kind of sat down and one day kind of just, begin to be a big red flag flying in front of my face. Is, wait a minute, if we take and remove the bells, and I think about a traditional school day and traditional classrooms, and I taught in the classroom, I understand, the uniquenesses of a traditional setting. Sometimes the last 5 minutes of class, well, actually most times the last 5 minutes, maybe more of the class, the students have completed their work and they just kind of sit there and wait for the bell to ring. That's just time wasted. And then we give them 5 minutes to go from class to class. And there's 5 minutes. Does every student need that 5 minutes? No. And then you go to the next classroom and you sit down and the teacher's, taking roll and doing different things. So it takes 5 minutes for most classes to get started. So there's 15 minutes six times a day. And we calculate that's about 40 instructional days a year in time. Wow. That we've given back to students to own and to manage. In the course of a high school year or high school freshman, sophomore, junior, senior years, we actually give them an extra instructional year back to manage and to operate and to own.
Now, you had an event several years ago in your life on a professional and personal level that was probably pretty eye-opening for you, from what I understand. I think you actually had your kids enrolled and you were a principal at one of the schools in this district, and you pulled your kids from that public school and put them in private school. Is that right?
Well, we didn't go to a private school. I think that was one part that was unique about it. Didn't go to a private school. We went to a different district.
Okay.
Because we were not meeting the needs of the kids in our district, in my personal needs of my kids. Mm-hmm. Some things were going on, and I didn't agree with them. And I'm thinking, well, professionally or as a parent here, professionally as a parent. So, we decided it was time to move our kids to a different district.
Was that the catalyst for you to kind of say, we got to do things differently in our district?
Well, yes, that was one of the catalysts that says, this is not the best way to serve our students, and especially not the best way to serve our community. We had students that had been leaving the district because their needs were being met educationally, socially, emotionally. And as I began to continue to work in the district as the elementary principal to begin with, we started seeing great gains and successes in really meeting the needs of our kids. And then as I took over as superintendent, we continued to dive deep into kind of differentiating instruction for kids. But really what made the difference was about a year and a half ago when we started to personalize learning for every kid in the district.
So a year and a half later, how do you think you're doing?
I wouldn't go back. I've had the best year in education in my life this last year. I'm excited to walk in every classroom. I almost bring tears to my eyes to watch the engagement of the kids in the classrooms, and the teachers' excitement and joy of teaching is there. It's returned. The relationships that are built with students is visible. Kids' engagement is beyond belief, in my opinion, as an educator in every classroom that I've been into, talking with the high school students to middle school students. This is the best thing I've ever seen for kids, and I would not go back. I'm very proud of the work our team has done.
Can you give me a specific example of where you've seen a child flourish in this new program?
We get a lot of visitors to our district, and it's good to watch the impact on the visitors when they come in. One of our visitors was a state legislator, and who was formerly a superintendent at a district not too far from Wilder. And so he came in, and as the superintendent, former superintendent, he knew what to look for. he knew that you can do this smoke and mirror thing if you need to, but he was going to dig right past that, look right past that, and he was going to get in and dig into the conversation with students. And so he asked me, he said, could I, pull students aside when they're walking down the hallway and talk to them? So we're standing in the high school hallway, and here comes a student down the hallway and pulls a student aside and asks the student, where they're coming from, why they were there, and where they were going. Student just said, I've been all morning in the science classroom working on a science project. And he goes, well, why were you in the science classroom all morning? And the student turns to him and said, well, because I'm behind in science. So I need to spend more time in my science class. And today I've set aside the afternoon to come in and work with my math teacher on some math concepts that I'm struggling with. So that's what I'm going to next. And he looks at me and he goes, wow, she knows what she's doing. I said, yeah, they do. It's called ownership of learning. And then another student comes by, the same thing happens three or four times. And he just kind of sat there and finally realized that there's no smoke and mirrors here. This is the real deal. Kids get it, and they can handle it, and they can manage it.
I imagine there's two sides to ownership and learning. It's part of growing up. Sometimes when you give them ownership, they're going to fail. And do you see that? And do you see that almost as a positive thing?
It's truly a positive thing because we have to, fail forward. We have to learn that failure is not where you stop. It's where you begin. And you have to take that and teach that so that kids can leave school with the ability to overcome difficult times in life, whether it's a job or a lot, family or whatever the situation may be. And we can do that through education. And we're able to work with these kiddos and really begin to work with them on what that means to own their learning. And you're going to fall and you're going to fail and it's not going to be pretty, but we're going to get back up. We're going to redo it and we're going to make it better.
And I'm sure there's probably some teachers listening who are thinking, this is crazy. They were suggesting we teach without giving a lecture or having an actual plan to go along with it. Is it like that? Do the teachers like this? Where are they on all this?
this idea that when you stand and deliver that all students are sitting there listening to you the whole time you're delivering is really a false sense of your teaching ability.
Right.
Most kids that are sitting there are waiting for you to get done. And, there are a few kids that listen to you and you can kind of catch them for a few minutes, but a lot of kids just kind of tune you out and they can sit there quietly. It doesn't mean they're listening to you. By flipping this model over, kids have to listen and engage the whole time. So teachers could be recording their lesson and the student will have to listen to the whole lesson and go back and find the pieces that they need and then apply those to the lesson they're working on. So it's really changed that, but it's also really allowed the teacher to work individually with the student exactly where that student needs help and not waste the student's time and not waste the teacher's time.
You took a big leap of faith here. Where did you get the confidence that this was going to work? Did you see it somewhere else? How'd that work?
Yeah, I knew it was a possibility. I went to visit a school in Utah that had jumped out. It was a high school. It was a school that said, "Hey, come to the school if you want a personalized learning plan. You know, get some freedoms and so on and so forth." So it was a choice for a parent to send their child there. And it was a really cool experience to watch this in action. But my district, my parents don't have a choice. I mean, they send their kids here because we're the public school. And so can I change a culture so that this personalized learning can be successful? And that was the concern for me. I knew it would be successful for every student, but we have to get that engagement by the teacher, but engagement by the student, because there's no choices. Students don't have a choice to go to a traditional classroom or a personalized learning classroom. It's going to be all personalized learning. And so it really was a step of faith, but part of that step of faith was I knew I had staff that had the capacity to make this shift as well.
Were there some special permissions that you had to get from, say, just type of government regulation in terms of classroom time? You guys are doing things differently, so.
So Idaho had passed a law that allowed, Idaho code allowed schools to apply for a mastery-based grant that gave districts the ability to remove the seat time for credits, which was a huge move for a state to do that.
And are there any metrics available that kind of support what you've been doing, or are test results back or graduation rates? Is there anything you can look at yet?
In the K-5 setting, our average math gains on the standards were a year and a half per student in math. So I think that's pretty good for the first year transitioning to this major shift and have a year and a half growth for your kiddos in math. The average number of books our kids read or listened to in the K-5 setting was 350 books per student.
Wow.
You know, our students come to class, and if a teacher skipped writing because they did something else for kids during that day, kids are coming to the teacher and said, "Wait a minute, you didn't give us writing time today. I need a minimum of 30 minutes to write today." These are elementary students telling teachers this information.
Right.
So that to me is a shift in culture, but it's also seeing that the data looks, you know, is very promising in the other side of that. Now, middle school, high school, what we saw more than anything else was kids really do gravitate toward longer school years, because 30% of our high school students voluntarily came to a four-week summer program to take advanced classes by choice.
Wow.
And about 25% in our middle school and high school combined took either advanced classes or they were finishing a class. So because we don't really have seat time requirements, kids were taking classes and they were two-thirds of the way through the class and the school year ended. Well, they didn't want to stop there. They wanted to come during the summer and they wanted to finish that third of the class up, and they did.
If somebody's listening and they want to do this themselves, where do you suggest they start?
I would suggest reaching out to, there's a lot of districts across and schools across the United States that are moving and working in this personalized learning space. Contact them, get in touch with them, go watch, go visit, see it in action, and kind of get that seed planted, get that passion going for meeting the needs of the kids in your district, and then begin to kind of push the boundaries if you need to a little bit.
Do you think this is the way of the future after seeing it in action?
Yes. When you think about when you pick up your phone, it's personalized.
Right.
I mean, everything that we do is personalized. You go to the doctor, it's personalized. You get in your car seat and your car seat, you know, moves because it's fitted to you, right? Yeah, it's your setting. It's your personalized for you. Why shouldn't education be? It's capable of happening, and we have the technology right there to do it. It's going to take leadership and teachers that really want to jump on board and meet the needs of their kids every single day, all day.
Well, Mr. Dillon, I applaud you for how aggressive you've been in implementing this. It sounds like you've guys got a great thing going on over there in Wilder, Idaho, and I really appreciate you sharing kind of all the details and intricacies with us.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity. It's amazing to watch, but more than that, it's really amazing to see the passions our kids now have for learning and literature and writing and reading. And it's really, that's what we're here for.
Excellent. Well, are you ready for our pop quiz?
I'm ready.
All right. So if students could only go to school for one subject, which subject should that be?
That should be science.
Why is that?
Because you learn history about science, you do math and science, you do science and science, you collaborate in science, and science will bring everything together for a student.
What are we not teaching in school that we should be teaching?
We should be focusing on more of the soft skills, the habits that kids need to have to be successful in life. You know, perseverance, to managing, you know, impulsivities, to, you know, the metacognition, thinking about your thinking, to collaborating, being innovative and creative.
What does every child deserve?
Every child deserves a great teacher and a relationship with that teacher so that student can be successful.
What's the biggest challenge for today's educators?
Flexibility and change. Educators need to, you know, get a hold of the reality of the world around us, and the world around us is about change. Every time you walk into a business, there's change. Every time you turn on your computer, it's updating. It's a new change. It's, you know, technology is changing rapidly. Everything around us seems to be upgrading and changing, and education's pretty slow. We need to be more flexible.
What's the best gift to give an educator?
I would think two things. One's a pat on the back and listen.
What career path would you have taken if it wasn't education?
Well, it's interesting you give me that question. I didn't start out in education.
Okay.
I actually was started out in ministry. I was a youth pastor and pastor for about 17 years. Education was kind of secondary.
That was your calling.
Teaching was teaching. And so this is a passion for me, and it's right here where I'm at is where I need to be. And so it was my second calling, and it's a great calling.
What teacher changed your life?
I think the teacher that changed my life was, I would say, my high school math teacher, who was also my basketball coach, John Ehrlich. And he was someone I would say has changed my life, just being a great figure of what it is to be a man. And what it is to be responsible and take on responsibility and adapt in situations and be successful.
Do you buy the school lunch or you bring your own?
I buy school lunch.
All right.
And that's because we've been able to think outside the box with our food service program.
Yeah.
And we've been able to combine our food service program with our culinary arts program.
Oh, that's great.
And we're able to provide many, many opportunities for students to create meals, prepare meals from scratch.
That sounds like a whole nother episode. That sounds really exciting.
That's a whole nother episode, yeah.
Last question, pen or pencil?
For me, it's pen.
All right. Usually it's pencil, so I'm glad to get some back in the pen ranks over here. Again, Mr. Jeff Dillon, we appreciate your time and chatting with us. Really fascinating stuff, what you guys are doing over there. Thanks for joining us.
And thank you for the opportunity. It's been a great time spending with you, and hope the listeners get an earful and get them to think about education and changes.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks again. Take care.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
By the way, Superintendent Dillon has launched a campaign to run for Superintendent of Public Instruction in Idaho for 2018. Best of luck to him. That
That's going to do it for this episode of Class Dismissed. We want to hear from you. So if you want to send us an idea or comment, remember you can always email us at info@classdismissedpodcast.com. We're here to support educators, but we need your support as well. So if you like what you heard today, be sure and subscribe to the show. And we'd also love it if you give us a 5-star review on iTunes. Don't forget you can connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/classdismissedpodcast. Or on Twitter, just search for us by typing in Class Dismiss. On behalf of Russ with School Status and Lissa representing all the teachers out there, I'm Nick Ortigo, and I'll talk with you next week.
Class Dismissed!